In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thank you so much for joining us, and happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday!
Let's meet the crew. I'm Brett Molina. I play video games. And what's getting me through this week is I started rewatching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and it's as delightful as I remember it. And I'm so happy that I have HBO Max right now. Call me back in 6 months and tell me if I'm still feeling this way. They need Batman the Animated Series, by the way. But yeah, Fresh Prince has been delightful.
I'm Brian Truitt. I watch movies. And what's gotten me through recently is finishing up The Clone Wars. I kind of the last season of Star Wars The Clone Wars animated series came out on Disney Plus recently. And it'd been like, there's this whole like, I mean, they'd been canceled from Cartoon Network. And it was like, and it, maybe it came back, maybe it wouldn't. You know, there's been so much about it over the years. And I didn't want to like go back to it just because Rise of Skywalker still lived. I still have a bad taste in my mouth from that. Yeah. And the fact I don't love the prequel era. I've never been that big a fan, but I figured because I should probably watch the show. So I did, and it was worth it because, I mean, they went back to Ahsoka Tano, which was, probably the one character Star Wars people who outside of the movies they really should care about because she's going to be on like The Mandalorian, probably teaming up with Baby Yoda coming up. But it was interesting because it wrapped up her story, and you know, because she used to be apprenticed to Anakin Skywalker. It wrapped up a lot of things like leading up to Order 66 in Revenge of the Sith, and it was interesting. I like what they did, so I'm glad I watched it.
So if this is your first time listening, welcome. New episodes of the Mothership drop every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen. While you're on Apple Podcasts, it would be awesome if you could write a quick review about the show. By doing that, you'll help other fans who love nerdy pop culture find us. And as a bonus, you get a very special shout out on the next episode. So try it out. Tell us what you want to see from the show. We love the feedback, and it's all upside for everybody. Don't forget, along with leaving a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod, or you can send an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. On to the main topic this week. Here is a clip.
Okay. I think I can make this work. Because I love you. You know something? The maestro got a kind of junky thing. He can be in two places at once, and his right pinky nail is completely black.
That was from the noir horror fantasy Dreamland, starring Stephen McHattie as a hitman and also the jazz trumpet player who's his latest target. The film, which premieres on digital streaming platforms today, also stars our special guest today, Henry Rollins. You know him as an actor, punk icon, writer, radio host, and an all-around awesome guy who plays Hercules, a violent and villainous club owner and gangster who orders his henchmen to bring him the trumpeter's finger. Henry, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, no problem, man.
So, Henry, the first question that we've asked a lot of our guests recently, and we'll ask you, is how's your quarantine going?
I answer this question with the greatest of care. Please don't take it the wrong way. My life hasn't changed that much. I work at home, and this year is pretty much dedicated to writing and editing for books coming out starting in December, because I own the publishing company. And so I'm kind of just on schedule. What has changed, besides big obvious changes in our country and world, is a lot of travel I had booked went away. Three trips to Europe, one to Australia, one to Uganda, and a trip to Antarctica, Falkland Island, South Georgia Island, Ushuaia. Hopefully is still intact, but I don't know if I want to be living on a ship for a month where it becomes a living petri dish. So that was, I had all kinds of, my shows went away. So all of that was awful. But considering why those things cancel, well, fair enough. But otherwise, I leave the house twice a week to get the mail, Wednesday and Saturday, and like every 10 or 12 days go to the grocery store. Past that, I have a small gym set up, my office, studio, so I can do my radio show work. So I get up every day. I don't work in bed. I mean, I get up, I get dressed, you know, I take a shower, and I go into my office and try and play normal day at the office. And so I'm trying to keep it normal to escape depression, inactivity. You know, I'm fully aware of what's happening out in the world, but I'm lucky that I'm not a frontline worker, you know, EMT, whatever. So in certain ways, I'm just kind of doing what's on my schedule for this year, which is just we're finishing up a book of mine. So reading the same damn manuscripts for like the ninth time. So that's been me since this thing started. I'm just doing my thing with, you know, less trips to the grocery store and less trips to the mail.
So you've waded into horror and genre films in the past. It's kind of been a thing that you've gone to quite frequently. What was the major appeal of Dreamland, though, for you?
Oh, I'm not really an actor. I'm just a wise guy, you know, just a ham. And so I get what's offered to me. It's not like my agent can, like, call a director, hey, my guy wants to be in your movie and not just hear the phone hang up in his face. So I'm like the catfish at the bottom of the river. Whatever my meal is what everyone else leaves behind. And so I get what I'm offered. And so Bruce, the director of the film, I've known since 1997. And he's just a really good guy. And it was my third project with him. And so the horror genre has thrown me roles over the years. I think it's because of a genre where you can just kind of go off. And that's kind of what they were hoping would happen. Bruce sent me the script whenever it was, you know, months before we shot in 2017, and said, would look over Hercules. And I looked at it and I see this person with no redeeming qualities whatsoever, just, you know, a horrible person. And I went, yeah, I'll take it. And so that was kind of it. And very little communication between me and Bruce until I saw him on set when I left the wardrobe trailer to walk out to set. I wasn't working that day to show him my outfit. And I think by the next morning I was gainfully employed in a scene with Stephen McHattie. But that was kind of how I got it, like an email through, I guess, the agent or direct to us. It's been a while, but it was Bruce. That's why I kind of stopped everything, because it's my pal Bruce is interested in me doing something. And so that was the main appeal. And then the challenge of, can I be this really awful person who laughs a lot? And laughing, you know, if something isn't funny and having to laugh, you know, take one, take two, take three is really hard. So I wanted to see if I could do that convincingly, because the character laughs quite a bit in, you know, really the wrong moments.
So did you bring any outside inspirations in figuring out how you wanted to portray this character?
Yeah, two things. One, I pretended the character is based on his name. How do you get Hercules? Either a prostitute or a woman or someone putting him on. Said, you know, you're a real Hercules. And the next day, well, you know, the ladies call me Hercules, and everyone who hates this guy but needs a paycheck or trying not to get hurt goes, yeah, you're Hercules. Hey, just call him Hercules. Maybe he'll leave. And so that was the idea of, like, no one buys it except for him. He has no friends, just people who get money from him, people who get children from him. And the only thing worse than a pedophile is one who feeds pedophiles children. And so he has no friends. And the idea of he's Hercules, he's Fredo on steroids. And so that was the idea of the, and like basically that's North. And you find all your directionality from that premise. So everything he's going to, how he's going to walk, talk, comes from that. And how awful and pathetic can I make this guy? Well, and that's kind of what I went in. I didn't base him on anyone I knew, just things I've read and seen, you know, Homo sapiens get up to.
Well, this year, at least according to IMDb, marks the 30th anniversary of your film debut in Kiss Napoleon Goodbye. What do you remember about that job in particular and where you were in your life?
The first time I was in a film was at the behest of Crispin Glover, who begged me to try acting one day. And I said, okay, I'll think about it. I'm trying to wrestle this whole independent music thing to the ground presently. Well, just, you know, when you're not doing that. And like within 2 months, I was in a UCLA student film, which I think has been released online finally, called No, Not One. And then after that, I was in The Chase. Or no, The Chase was later. I'm sorry. You're right off by one film.
Okay.
I think that was but it's not on any list, so I don't think you'd know. So no harm, no foul. I'm a guy who came out of the minimum wage working world of the 1970s, early 80s into music. I left Washington, D.C. from my ice cream scooping job with a duffel bag into the Black Flags van, you know, with a high school diploma. So I basically, you know, what I'm trying to tell you is I had no plan. And so when someone says, you want to try some music? Yeah. Yeah, I'll try that. You want to try some acting? Yeah. Like, why not? So and I'm now pushing 60, and that's kind of my ethos. I'll try that. And so the acting work is just, for me, it's been when I'm not on tour, I tell the agent, like, yeah, I'm here for the next 3 months, or I'll be in LA Jan, Feb, March next year. And if anyone will take me, I'll definitely go to that audition. And that's been my history of acting. I don't think anyone's beating down the door for my acting skills. I'm quite sure they're not.
So you've been a constant in movies and TV, and you've had several really cool roles throughout your career.
I've just been lucky. Yeah, I've just fooled them. So.
So what's changed over that time about what you look for and what kind of roles most interest you?
Over the years, I've learned a bit about acting from being on set and watching real actors. And you learn how to be part of an ensemble. You learn to stop saying the words after the other actor stops talking, which describes probably the first 10 things I ever did. And you can always tell the non-actor in a movie. I can't. Like, you don't act because you're not acting. You're just talking when the other guy stopped. And so when I learned, as they say, to be in the moment, that was kind of a turning point for me, where on every take, you really do believe you are that guy in that scene. And you stop thinking about your physicality because your intent is now directing you. I'm sure this is acting 101. I couldn't tell you. But that's the turn for me. And that's what helped me start making choices in films where I looked at the script. And as I was reading it, I could see me being that guy. And that would give me the confidence to go in and audition in front of real casting people. Like when you go into a film, suddenly it's very real because you are surrounded by people who do this for a living. This is what they do. From the makeup person to the actor to the director, it's all bloody serious. And while I don't take myself seriously, I take the job and what the work is with the seriousness of a heart attack. And so once I was better able to define what the work was, I was able to say, well, I shouldn't even audition for that because there is nothing I can bring to that character. Where 5 years previous, well, yeah, man, I'll show up. So I learn to aim a little just from just being on set, you know, just experiencing and going, okay, this is not the right role for me. Only 5 more weeks to go. And you just, and maybe that was an acting lesson. Maybe that's the lesson right there, where you just have to grow into it. But I learned a lot about acting from being on Sons of Anarchy, where you are acting 3 to 5 days a week for about 5.5 months. Like, you're not really doing much else. That was, and to be surrounded by real talent, you kind of find yourself running a little faster just from the sheer speed of everyone else. It rubs off.
You mentioned, you know, your time in Black Flag and then later the Rollins Band in the 90s. What do you miss most about that time period where you mentioned you were kind of wrestling the independent music scene to the ground?
I don't miss much about it because I think I did it right in some ways, in that I did it to death, to quote James Brown. You know, I played as hard as I could, as many shows as I could. I don't think there's any more lyrics left in me. I mean, I took a wet washcloth and wrung it out, and it's bone dry. And so when I left music, the day I left music, because I woke up one morning and I went, wow, I have no more lyrics. I called my manager about an hour later, and I said, I'm done with music. And he saw, you know, 10% of that flying out the window and went like, no, you'll do a greatest hits tour. I said, I don't have any hits. And that would be me just going up there and, hey, kids, remember this one? No, but my dad does. And so why fake it when I can go do something else and go risk failure elsewhere? And so I kind of did it to where there was nothing left for me to do except have more shoulder and knee pain. And I don't miss it because I knocked on every door and I turned over every stone. I miss my body from those days. I miss being able to get out of a chair and not go, wow, that hurts. You know, I wrecked my body. You know, I paid. And I pay for it every day. I click and pop everywhere I go. But I just did it to the max, to where, you know, when I put that particular sword down, I had no need to pick it up. Because I kind of fought every battle I could. And I would rather starve than take up some contract from some promoter, as if anyone's going to ever tour again. But hey, we'll give you X amount of money for you to go out there and weave through your old music for 7 festival dates with a band that will help assemble for you. And that kind of thing has been offered to me. And the paycheck is, it was amazing. And I just went, no, I can't do that. And I'm like, really? Why not? I'm like, just fake. Who wants to live in that for a summer? And so I try to really be done with things when I'm done with them and never come back. So I don't miss, when I used to go to airports, I'd run into bands, you know, a bunch of bearded men with laminates hanging from their necks, standing in line to get into business class. And I go, that's all yours, man. Rumble, young man, rumble. I'm not young and I'm rumbling in other places.
So we see you're playing Triclops in the new Masters of the Universe animated series that's coming out on Netflix. What's working on that been like for you?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, Triclops is a true believer in, you know, the motherboard. So he's blind to any criticism. And so he's just one of those true believers. And I've been around people like that. So I just assigned, you know, a lot of fury to that and took my direction as best I could. Kevin, you know, the main man behind us, a longtime pal of mine, and he just contacted me like, hey, you want to come in on this? And I auditioned for a different part and that didn't get it. And they said, well, what about this? I said, man, I just want to be involved in something I think I can pull off. And when I saw the lines for Triclops, I said, yeah, I really, you know, and I rehearsed them and I went in there. So I've been in there a couple of times. I have, you know, it's not like they're showing me anything. I have no idea if I will ever be called again to be involved. I have no idea. So that might have been it for me on that film.
Right. You mentioned a book that you're working on for a December release. What's that about, or what can you talk about? What can you say about it?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's second in a series of music books. The first one came out last year in December. The volume 2 will come out this December. It's an 8.5 by 11 large format book called Stay Fanatic. And it's me writing about rare records, pictures of record stores I go into all over the world, rare records, flyers, set lists, test pressings, acetates, memorabilia from my ridiculous collection since the Carter administration, at least. And so it's this basically record collector mania by a hyper enthusiastic person writing to you from here to South Africa about crawling record stores, collections, eBay battles, Discogs want lists coming true, you know, train spotting, you know, with, you know, a clap push up sense of intensity.
What is your holy grail record?
I can't tell you. Thank you for allowing me to be that guy. But it involves a band from the 70s. I saw it once. I should have bought it. Someone else did. I doubt I'll ever see it again. So the next one that comes up for sale or auction, it must be me. So I would like to answer that. Once I get the record, I'll call you and tell you that I got it. But for right now, the cards are in the vest. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I'm 59 years old. That's what my life has come to.
So as someone who has made a career out of performing in front of people, whether in music or movies, TV, what are your thoughts about entertainment and what it's going to look like, especially in terms of being in movie theaters or going to concerts, once we get past everything?
It's going to change radically. And so people like me, I might never tour again the way I used to. That might be over. So 2018 was good, my last big tour. And maybe that's it. And I think the smart person doesn't hope for better days. You just invent a good day by reinventing yourself. I feel bad for all those bands who are like on their, you know, second album, because you're not going to get to probably go out this summer and, you know, hit those festivals, you know, Reading Festival, where, whatever, Roskilde. That's probably not going to happen for a long time, if ever. And so the future of entertainment, it's going to be those who can figure out safe ways until we get some miraculous vaccine. I just don't think you're going to be putting a bunch of happy, sweaty people inside a theater downtown and putting rock and roll in front of them, or cramming them into a movie theater for the next big movie from, you know, the next Iron Man or whatever. I just don't think that's going to happen unless you want to sign some crazy insurance waiver. For me, I'm all about the science and the epidemiologists. I don't want to, not the kind of roulette I want to play. And so I'm in that business, and I think my future is nothing what I thought it was going to be 6 months ago. I have a tour booked. I just don't know if those dates are going to hold. So far, all my shows this year canceled, one after another, like gone. So the future is what, for me, is what I'm going to make of it. Entertainment in large, innovation, you know, because I don't think it's going to be what it was for either ever or for a long time, much to my great regret. I miss it so much.
Awesome, Henry. Thank you so much for taking time, and stay healthy and good luck with the book and everything.
Thank you very much. You too, guys. Take care.
Okay, listeners, it's your turn. Are you going to watch the new Henry Rollins movie? Do you remember Black Flag or the Rollins Band from back in the day? Do you have a favorite song? Let's talk about it on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod, or you can tweet at us individually. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
And I'm at Brian Truitt.
And don't forget, you can send us an email to mothershippod@usatoday.com. That'll wrap it up this week. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilot / producers of the Mothership, Shannon Green and Natalie Boyd. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss an episode, you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts. While you're there, please leave a rating or a review. It helps other folks find the show. We get really great feedback from you. You get a shout out. Everybody wins. If Apple Podcasts isn't your jam, you can also find us on Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Thanks again. Until next week, nerds out.
Stay inside.